Spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation, and it shall be a statute forever in your generation. The eternal light. National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's program, The Man Who Knew Carver, was written by Morton Wishengrad and is presented in commemoration of Lincoln's birthday. Featured as Carver is Maurice Ellis, and the narrator is Edgar Staley.
He used to lie back on his pillows and listen to the voices of the young people outside the window. He was 83 years old and very tired. And then one evening he just closed his eyes. I like to remember, now that he's gone, how everything he touched became suffused with his great love. Strange, isn't it? He could have felt bitterness, but there was no trace of bitterness in him. He could have complained, but his voice had no hint of reproach in it. I knew him very well, a tall, stoop-shouldered Negro called George Washington Carver. I'd like to tell you about him. Mr. Moses Carver was a farmer. From Illinois, he'd gone to the Missouri wilderness to build himself a farm. He worked hard at it, girdling the trees, rooting out the stumps, and planting the fields. But a man gets tired of hard work, and a man's wife gets tired of milking, and cooking, and churning butter. So Moses Carver went to his neighbor, Colonel Grant.
I guess my wife and me can't manage by ourselves anymore. Colonel Grant, do you think you could sell me one of your slaves?
I think I could, Moses, if you've got the price. $1,500. Take your pick of any man I've got.
That's a deal more than I've got. I only $700.
Market price is $1,500, Moses.
My wife's going to be disappointed. She's been ailing lately.
You say you've got $700?
Yes, Colonel.
Well, I'll sell you Mary. Mary's a fine girl. You take Mary, Mr. Carver. Just 13 years old and sound as a nut. You won't be making a mistake.
She was a slave girl called Mary, and after they bought her, she took the name Carver. They were fond of her. They taught her as much as they knew. And when she became a grown woman and told them she wanted to marry one of Colonel Grant's slaves, Moses Carver gave his blessing.
He's a decent man. I hope you'll both be happy.
And they were happy. The Carvers allowed him to come whenever he could get away. He came a lot during the next years to see Mary, to see his son, Jim, and then to see the little baby, the baby they called George. Then one day, just like any other day, he didn't come. One of the women came instead.
Sit down, Mary. I've got bad news. It's your man. A log fell on him, and they tried to do everything. He's dead, Mary.
That was bad, but worse was to come. For these were the days of Missouri Free State, days and nights when the Jayhawkers came riding over from Kansas, shooting, raiding, burning, and the Missouri bushwhackers shooting and raiding and burning back.
Raiders! Watch out! Raiders!
That's the way it was in 1861. And in 1861, it was Moses Carver who came running from the field.
Get away from them windows! They're coming!
I guess it's safe to come out now. They've gone.
Bentley, which way did they go?
What's the difference, Mr. Carver? So long as they've gone.
A good deal of difference. They took Mary and little George.
Well, I reckon it could be a lot worse.
Bentley, bring them back.
Well, I don't know.
I want them both back. I'll give you 40 acres of land and my horse. Will you try, Bentley?
40 acres and a horse? Well, sure, Mr. Carver. Reckon I can try. You can keep your 40 acres, Mr. Carver. No sign of Mary. Folks say she's been took south. But I brought this back. It's still alive.
Thank you, Bentley.
I guess they just left him behind to die.
You can take the horse for him. The horse is worth $300.
Well, that's decent of you. I'm sure getting the best of this swap. What did you say his name was?
She called him George.
Well, if you say he's worth a $300 horse, that's what you say. I'll be taking the horse and getting along. Come on, girl.
I don't know much about his early life, except that he left the Carvers when he was pretty young to get some schooling. He moved around from place to place, and somewhere along the line he picked up a middle name and taught himself to paint with homemade watercolors and to play the accordion and to cook and do laundry for people. But most of all, people began to take notice of him because he had a great gift.
Bless me, Miss Courtney, that man has a green thumb. Why, I had a bush of roses that just wouldn't grow. Then he came along. Look at them. Gracious.
He naturally took to flowers and plants. If there was a piece of ground no one was using, he put something in it to grow. Sometimes he was hungry, but no one ever knew. He laughed a lot and studied things out of books a lot. And then one day, when he felt he was ready for it, he made out an application for a little college someone told him about. Maybe it was the postman brought him the good news.
Hey, congratulations, George. Yeah, sure, I opened it. Don't think I'd hold a job like this if I couldn't read people's mail, do you? Yeah. Well, George, guess now you're going to college. It's a fine thing. Yep, mighty fine. Congratulations, George.
He sold the few things he had and worked hard all summer saving his money. And then, when the summer was over, he went to the college with his admission slip in his hands and knocked on the president's door.
Sir, I've come to matriculate. Here are my papers, and that's the admission card with your signature, sir.
Yes, this is my signature. Are you George Washington Carver?
Oh, yes, sir.
I see. Please forgive me. I'm afraid there's been a mistake.
Sometimes when a wind breaks a branch off a tree, the tree will die. Sometimes, if there's plenty of air and sunlight and clean water, the tree will just keep on growing. Carver was like that. He kept on growing. His laugh was gentle, and when people asked him about it, he'd smile.
Your husband's shirts are ready, Mrs. Jenkins.
Oh, they look fine, George.
Thank you, ma'am, thank you. If I get a chance, I'll stop by to look at your begonias. I think maybe the soil needs a bit of lime.
If there was sickness in his soul, no one could see it. He kept on with his books. He tried his hand at oil paints. He went to church on Sunday and stood in the rear pew and sang hymns with the rest. And always he filled each waking moment with some good or useful work. Then, when he was 30 years old, he made out another application. This time to Simpson College in Indianola, Iowa.
Well, George Carver, so you're really going to be leaving us?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we'll miss you.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
What are you going to study, George?
I'm not sure I know. What I want is an education.
Land sakes, you ought to know what kind. Why, just an education isn't enough. What do you want them to teach you?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Ma'am, you can't teach people anything. You can only draw out. That's what I'm going to college for. I want to find out what's in me.
There were 300 white students in Simpson College. And then there was George Carver. It wasn't easy at first. A lot of things weren't easy. He wanted to study art, but the art teacher couldn't see the sense of a colored man learning how to paint landscapes. He didn't plead, and he wasn't stubborn. He just listened and nodded his head. But she let him enter the class on trial.
Did you paint this?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm.
Is it bad, ma'am?
You didn't copy these roses, did you?
Oh, no, ma'am. I'm not much good at copying.
Yes, that's right. A little more black here to bring out the highlight.
Is it bad, ma'am?
Bad? Carver?
Yes, ma'am.
If you want to, you can stay in this class.
I don't know much about art, but I've got one of his paintings hanging on my wall. It's been there for 30 years, and I still like to look at it. Maybe that's the test. I don't know. But he did like to paint, and then one day he packed away his paintbrushes. It was a hard thing to do.
You've made up your mind, George?
I feel like crying.
I know. I feel like crying, too.
Suppose I became the best painter in America.
You could, you know.
But it wouldn't do my people much good.
No. No, it wouldn't.
Ma'am, I'm going to leave Simpson College. I'm going to register in the Iowa State College of Agriculture. That's what my people need. That's how I can be of service to my people.
God bless you, George.
My name is Carver, sir. Can you tell me where I'm to eat?
Just a moment. Stacy?
Yes, Professor?
Take my place for a few minutes like a good fellow, will you?
Glad to, Professor.
Thank you, Stacy. All right, Carver, come with me through this door.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Now, let me see. Place for you to eat. Yes, that's so. Well, let me see now.
Oh, that's all right, sir. I understand.
What's that?
I understand, Professor.
I'm terribly sorry, old man. You'll find the stairs to the basement just beyond the corridor.
The stairs just beyond the corridor?
That's right, Carver. The stairs going down.
So he ate in the basement and went about his business, which was learning. Chemistry, physics, dairying, algebra. Carver liked that. Sometimes when he was depressed, he took out his paintbrushes and painted a still life, and he felt better. He stayed for 4 years and took his degree. And then he was named a member of the faculty. I think that was the happiest day in George Carver's life. And the next years were happy. He performed experiments crossing and hybridizing fruits. He studied the fungus diseases, molds, mildews, and toadstools. And it wasn't long before farmers with sick plants and unproductive orchards were coming to the college to inquire.
Hello, son. Can you tell me where I can find George Washington Carver?
And, of course, they told him. And then he found the man called Carver and asked his question and received his answer.
How much do I owe you?
Oh, nothing.
Well, I've taken your time.
I'm glad to give it to you.
Well, you're entitled to something. It isn't right to do all those things without pay.
Oh, but you're wrong, sir. Doing them for money wouldn't be right. But please come again whenever you have a problem.
Yes, I will. I'll do that. Thank you, Mr. Carver.
It was a happy time. A time when George Washington Carver was preparing himself for the call. Elsewhere, another man was giving expression to the call, a man named Booker T. Washington.
During the next half century and more, my race must continue passing through the great American crucible. We are to be tested in our patience, our forbearance, our perseverance, our power to endure wrong, to withstand temptations, to economize, to acquire a new skill, in our ability to compete, to succeed in commerce, to disregard the superficial for the substance, to be great and yet small, learned and yet simple, high and yet the servant of all.
It was inevitable that their paths should cross. Booker T. Washington of Tuskegee and George Washington Carver of Iowa State. Tuskegee called. It was a ramshackle little place in Macon County, Alabama. A few thousand acres of unfertile land and a few tumble-down shacks and a few Negro boys coming to get an education to fit them for the land. Tuskegee and Booker T. Washington called, and George Washington Carver packed his books and his boxes of specimens and turned toward the south.
It isn't much.
No, it isn't.
But it is a beginning.
Oh, but it's good enough for me, Mr. Washington. Yes, this is where I belong.
Fine.
Now, if you don't mind, I'll take a little walk.
Well, I...
You don't mind, do you?
It isn't a good idea to walk at night. We don't stir out after dark.
I see.
You've lived in the West. Perhaps I should tell you a few things.
Yes, perhaps you'd better, Mr. Washington.
That's one of the things, Mister. In town, I'm afraid you'll have to call me by my first name.
Oh.
That's how we are supposed to address one another. I call you George. You call me Booker.
I'm learning a great deal.
Believe me, it will save trouble later. If a white man speaks to you, take off your hat.
I see.
And if you walk on the street, walk on the side toward the gutter.
All right. I can do that.
Thank you. Someday I hope people will realize that you can't keep a man in a ditch unless you're willing to stay there with him.
And so George Washington Carver began to learn from the South. And the South began to learn from him. He found a country once fat and fertile, now parched and wasted because of the ravages of cotton and the one-crop system. Lush and teeming land was now gullied, washed, and eroded. And where once backs had bent above the cotton rows, now there was an arid expanse of scrub pine and broom sedge. The salvation of this land became the gospel of George Washington Carver.
They told me to see you, Professor Carver.
Oh, you're the new student, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, we need all the students we can get. You're going to help me reclaim this land.
No, sir. I'm not going to do anything like that.
Oh, wait. There's nothing wrong with southern land except that it's exhausted because of the one-crop system. We'll plant peanuts and cowpeas and sweet potatoes to replenish the soil.
Not me, sir. I've been farming all my life. I came to Tuskegee to get away from farming.
I see. Tell me, son, are you sure you don't want to study farming?
Sure as I was born.
Well, how would you like to study agriculture?
Agriculture?
Yes, son.
That would be just fine, Professor. That's what I want.
Well, now that you've tried it, son, how do you like agriculture?
I didn't know much when I came here, did I?
That's why you came.
I'll do anything to help the colored man, sir.
Son, we're helping the South. Our job is to improve southern agriculture.
What if we do? Will they give us credit for it? Will they respect us?
Creative genius is what makes people respect you. It's not a color question. It's a question of whether you have what the world wants. Now, go back to the laboratory.
Ye shall know science, and science shall make ye free. George Washington Carver said that. He believed it, too. In his laboratory at Tuskegee, where he used a china bowl for a mortar and a piece of metal for a pestle, George Washington Carver put the soil of the South under a microscope. And he took the simple, ordinary, overlooked products of the southern soil and broke them down in the test tube. Once I stood by his side and saw what he'd done.
These products come from the peanut and the sweet potato. Oh, but you look as if you don't believe it.
I don't.
All these things you see, every one of them, from the peanut and the potato,
There's milk and cream.
The milk and the cream. All these medicines, this candy, all these beverages.
I still don't believe it.
Paint, dyes, plastics, metal polish, washing powder, rubbing oil, linoleum, even this coffee. Oh, but I better stop or you'll say I'm boasting. You know, that's the trouble with people. They talk too much. Tell me, did you ever see a heavy thinker with his mouth open?
No, I don't think I have.
Good. Then maybe I'll shut up.
George Washington Carver shut up. For the things he did, the brilliant discoveries which were giving the South hundreds of new industries, well, they couldn't be shut up. All over America, men and women began to talk about George Washington Carver. They gave him medals. They offered him money. A good deal of money.
Thank you kindly, sir. But I don't need money. Why, my salary here is $1,500 a year.
$1,500 a year. A paint company sent a man to see him. He'd invented a dye that they wanted. A paint of the bluest blue any man had ever seen.
I'm sorry, sir. If God helps me to find things, it's not for people to make profit. It's to help people. No, this dye is not for sale. I'm terribly sorry you've come for nothing, but may I show you around, sir?
People were really talking about him now. Theodore Roosevelt was his friend, and Mr. Coolidge, and Thomas Edison, and Henry Ford. Mr. Edison offered him a lot of money. Some folks say more than $100,000 a year. And George Washington Carver smiled and shook his head.
Money isn't valuable. I've got everything I need. I'm doing what I want to do, and this is where I belong.
That's what he was like. He gave the South new crops and new industries worth hundreds of millions of dollars. But he wore his old suit of clothes, the one he himself had patched at the knee. There are some people who show off their humility. He wasn't a show-off. He was a genuinely humble man.
What's the matter with my tie?
That isn't a tie. That thing is practically a frayed old shoestring. Now, please, won't you buy a new tie?
I'm fond of this one. I've had it for years.
That's the whole point. After all, what would people say all those places you go to?
Gracious. People don't want to look at my tie. People want to hear about the peanut.
The whole world wanted to hear about the peanut and what it could produce. There was the Ways and Means Committee of the House of Representatives. Yes, he spoke to them. He told them a few jokes, had a bit of fun. And then he showed them his bottles.
This bottle has face cream in it. And here, buttermilk, leather stain, wood filler, ink, cheese, three kinds of punch. You can see for yourself.
Dr. Carver, maybe I shouldn't say this, but you're a great man. Someday the South will bless your name.
I was with him that day after he left the House Ways and Means Committee. I went to the Union Station with him, and we took the same train. He was always thoughtful and tactful, and he made an excuse so that he could go to his car at the front of the train without making me feel badly because we weren't permitted to sit together. I don't suppose I'll ever forget that. He used to lie back on his pillows and listen to the voices of the young people. He was 83 years old and tired. 9 years ago, January, he died. I like to think, now that he's gone, that the world is a better place because he lived in it. I don't really know. It's only a hope, that's all. Just a hope.
Thank you.
would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take pleasure in presenting Mr. Walter White, Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Mr. White.
The Eternal Light Program and the National Broadcasting Company have made us their debtors by presenting this moving drama of a great benefactor of mankind. It is a tribute to the vitality of the democratic process that a George Washington Carver could rise from depths of poverty and prejudice to such exalted heights. It is, however, to America's shame that the almost unbelievable privations which were imposed on him are still used to block similar achievement by other Americans because of the color of their skin. Today, the infamous Ku Klux Klan rides again in Georgia and Ohio. In our nation's capital, a small band of willful men are banded together to block legislation by the Congress designed to end discrimination based on race, creed, color, or national origin. But the spirit of human freedom with which George Washington Carver was so richly endowed is on the march today as it has never been before. In the atomic age ushered in at Hiroshima, we all became members of one human family threatened by the same obliterative forces. But if we are as wise and unselfish as was Dr. Carver in the use of his great scientific genius, a richer and fuller life than mankind has ever known lies ahead for all of us. May we, in enlightened self-interest, follow the noble example he set for us.
Thank you, Mr. White. Eternal Light drama today, The Man Who Knew Carver, was written by Morton Wishengrad and was presented in commemoration of Lincoln's birthday. The music was arranged by Morris Mimorski and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured as Carver was Maurice Ellis, and Edgar Staley was the narrator. The production was under the direction of Frank Papp. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America.